Action Chapter of ADAPT and advocate for the civil rights of people with disabilities. All ADAPT actions are nonviolent.
Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees signals that it is 8 p.m. on Thursday and time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, and it's only here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. Tonight, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on journeys through windows of their souls and transport us to a montage of magical worlds before returning us safely here back at the KPFT station and to your homes. Hi, I'm Harwood Taylor. I'm the director of Grimion & Company Fine Art, and I'm also super excited to be here tonight co-hosting the show along with my good friend Chris Gorman. We really love this show, and Dr. Hank asking us to be here tonight is a real treat. Also, we're excited to listen to a new story, hot off the presses, from our special guest and friend, Jackson Shaw. We are thrilled that she could join us. Hi, Jackson.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, we're here to have a good time tonight, and we were always so glad when anyone, Hank or Greg or Warren or Mary, any of the hosts, ask us to come and host, because it gives us a chance to do what we really love to do, which
That's
is
right.
tell stories, right? And I was thinking about it. Sometimes it's hard to have a creative practice in this world today. I mean, there's so many demands on your time. I mean, you got the job, things that call you away from the things you really wish you were doing the whole time. Kind of like that thing they used to hang up that says, gone fishing.
Right.
You know, sometimes we'd rather just be gone storytelling.
Exactly.
But tonight we just want to honor and celebrate everyone, whether they're in this room, the next room, the studio in Houston, that has a creative practice that really means something to them, that they invest their time in. And sometimes you have to combat things like apathy, exhaustion, you know, finances. People come back to their creative practice for a reason. Because it feeds them and fills their soul. So we just want to encourage everyone who's out there that has a creative practice, whether it be storytelling, poetry, if you're painting a landscape in your garage, or maybe you're trying out a new recipe, or crocheting a blanket, just something that really means something to you. We want to encourage everyone to dive into their creative process and to remember to do things that feeds the creativity inside of them. Just like we are tonight. This
Absolutely.
Is what we're doing, and we're going to have a great time telling stories because that's what we love to do.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like talking to you, Chris, so this is just like normal stuff.
Right? We are chatty people, so just get ready for it, okay? The stories we've chosen for you tonight are as varied and unique as the storytellers that are sitting here. But the one thing they all have in common is the passion and love poured into them by the people telling them. They shine bright with that creative flame we were talking about earlier. So you need to get comfortable, get a drink, relax, and recharge. And, you know, you need to because you have creative stuff you might be doing later too. Okay? Harwood's going to start us off tonight. If all the stories he tells were in a jukebox, this is one of the stories I would always press the button for. Why don't you tell me this story now?
All right, so it was about 1993, and I work at an art gallery. I still work there, and I had a client in the gallery. It was at night. This guy's a workaholic banker, and he bought a painting from me, and so now we're walking back out to the car. And I'm not a particularly guy, you know, big car guy. I mean, I liked Hot Wheels when I was a kid, but when we turned the corner, I saw this beautiful BMW, and it just seemed a little different. It sat a little lower. The tires were a little wider and better designed. It was just something about it. I said, wow, that is really beautiful. And he said, well, you know about that car, right? And that's my third one. It's called an M5. And he said, you know, you ought to buy it. I'm about to buy a new one, and you know how I take care of things. He was very fastidious. And so it was immaculate. And I said, Jerry, I live in a garage apartment. I'm not going to buy an M5. So he said, well, why don't you just sit in it? So I sat in the car, and it was beautiful. And then he turned it on, and it just went, it made this beautiful sound, and all the dials lit up. And then Annie Lennox's voice came on. Well, I bought that car. So about 2 weeks later, as it would happen, a client came into the gallery, and as I'm letting him out the front gate, I noticed that he had an M5. He had a black one. And I said, wow, that's a beautiful car. And he said with some pride, well, do you know what that is? And I said, no, I lied. Because I wanted to learn about my car. And he said, that's an M5. It's actually the most powerful production-made car on Earth. I said, really? How fast will it go? He said, well, mine will go 175. It's got the Denon chip. Well, I said, well, how fast will the regular ones go? And he said, well, right out of the factory, they'll go 155. There's a governor on it. And I said, well, where would you even go that fast? I mean, we live in Houston. It seems kind of odd. He says, well, sometimes on the holidays, you know, the toll roads clear out and, you know, there's just nobody on the road and you can do it there. And so, you know, note to self, I'm taking all these notes. Well, Labor Day weekend rolls around and I want to go to a movie with my friend Kevin, who's been many of my stories. And so now I'm going from my garage apartment to the dollar movie in my M5 BMW with Kevin. And we get all the way out to the far side of town, and it's way out there. And the dollar movie is sold out. It's like the 10 o'clock, you know, I don't know if it was Pulp Fiction or something. Anyway, and so we're driving back, and the toll road's right there, and it's Labor Day, and I'm like, hey, Kevin, did I tell you about this guy that came in? This car apparently will go 155 miles an hour. You want to see if it really does it? He said we could do it on the toll road, and it's right here. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm in. So now we're in third gear. We're already going 85 miles an hour. And then very quickly, we're up to 120. And at 120, it was really weird, but it felt right in this car. Like, this car felt like, this is what I'm supposed to do. Thank you very much. It was solid as can be. But the other thing that was happening is that the road felt like it was narrowing to me. And so I was afraid to look at the speedometer. And I said, Kevin, can you tell us how fast we're going? So he's calling it out. 125, 130, 135, 140. Then it started to slow. He's like 144, 145, 6, 150, and then 151. 150. So we end up, I could feel it. I was like, we're going 155. I can feel the car. Had the governor kicked in. We did the same thing back. We got all the way out to the airport in about 7 minutes. And we got all the way back. And I said, you want to do it one more time? I mean, I'm never going to do this again. I'm not that kind of guy. I just wouldn't, you know. So he's like, you know, I really need to get home. I said, we're going to go 155. I'll have you back in 20 minutes. And he's like, oh, that's right. Okay, let's go. So we got all the way out to the airport. We're headed back. He also had this car outfitted with the most sophisticated, you know, radar detector at the time. But even a really sophisticated radar detector, if you're going 155, you're going to be up on that police officer very quickly. The alarm went off, the radar detector went crazy, and I slammed on the brakes and I pulled way over, and we passed up the cop, and going pretty quick. And I had parked before he had started his car, so I heard him start his car, you know, pull up behind us. Well, the wheel wells from stopping a car going 155 miles an hour very quickly were billowing smoke. And and I just blurted out because I was really scared. I was like, officer, if you can believe me, I've never done this before and I'll never do it again. I just wanted to see how fast the car would go one time. And he looks at me and he says, I'm supposed to arrest you. And he says, get out of the car. I get out. He says, he points me to his car. He says, come, you know, walk with me back here. And he, look at that. And so I look into his car and it has a little old fashioned digital readout. This is in 1993. It says 135. And I thought, well, at least he didn't get me going 155. Anyway, he says, go sit in the car. So I sat in the car and I said, gosh, I'm sorry, Kevin. He goes, no, man, this is cool. This is, and I said, I think he's going to arrest us and whatever. Anyway, guy shows up in my window. And he says, he starts to hand me the ticket and he pulls it back and he looks me in the eye and he says, look at me, son, pay this ticket. Don't take defensive driving. Don't take deferred adjudication. I can change this ticket. He says, pay the ticket. I said, yes, sir. And he gives me the ticket and I look at it. It says 65 and a 55. I'm like, wow. I said, hey, thank you so much. He says, shut up. Drive safely. Good night. So, you know, I'm in my mid-20s. I lucked out. But I'm also disorganized and, you know, I'm just, I'm really meant to pay that ticket. But it got to be that day when it was due. And I was on the far side of town. It's 4 o'clock. The clerk that accepted the money in the downtown courthouse where I had to pay it was, you know, a long ways away. So now I'm speeding to pay my speeding ticket. I get to the courthouse. I race in the front door. I look at the elevators. There's a line of people. I'm like, damn it. And then the clock is ticking. It's literally like right before 5. So I go racing up the stairs, turn that third flight of stairs, and I can see there's that thick glass where you slide the money under the thing and, you know, the clerk's there. I run up to the window and she goes, you must be William Harwood Taylor. That's really me. I go by my middle name. I said, how do you know that? She says, very seriously, she was not chatty, do you have the money? It was like a drug deal. I said, no. I mean, I said, yes, of course I have the money. And she said, if you don't, your officer, I have him on hold on the other line. He's in his car with his family in his driveway. If you don't have the money, he's coming to pick you up. I said, I have the money. And I slid it under the glass and I said, please tell him to have a good vacation and thank you so much. And the end. Mm. Happily ever after.
I love that story so much.
Why do you love it?
I love it because you're going really fast.
It was fast.
In a really hot car. And I've always wanted to do that. And it kind of speaks to who you are. You kind of, you don't do a lot of risky stuff, but when you do, it's noteworthy.
That was a noteworthy risk-taking activity, okay. Yes.
I do want to ask you, is there something in that story that makes you think about how you feed your creativity or your creative flame, as we are calling it right now, the candle of your creativity?
Yeah, well, you know, there is, and it's being around people that support it, and people like you and Jackson, and people like Kevin, you know, just something about Kevin. He's kind of wild. He's kind of, it's not wild, but he's just, he's unconventional and he's up for anything. And I think being around people where I feel safe to make a weird suggestion, like, do you want to go 155 miles an hour? And of course, I don't know if I'd do that today unless I was maybe on a closed racetrack or something. But, boy, it was really fun.
If you hadn't have done that in your 20s,
I wouldn't have a story now.
I wouldn't respect you either.
Right.
So it's good that you did it.
All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Glad to earn your respect. So we're so pleased to have Jackson Shaw join us. She's an accomplished poet and a great friend who published a new book of poetry last year, What to Do with Red. I have ordered your book on Amazon and it comes in the mail and it's beautiful and I've read it. One of the most depressing things I've ever read was in that book, but also some of the most inspiring things at the same time.
Oh, good.
I read it nightly to Chris. Well, I have been recently. Mm-hmm. This is true.
Great.
And she has more fun with words, really, than anybody I know. Jackson has a new story that I can't wait to hear. Can you tell it to us now?
Yes. My story has a title, Who's It? What's It? A Story of Puzzles and Poems.
Ah, great.
I come from a family of puzzlers. Both my mother and father solved the daily newspaper crosswords and cryptograms, as did my grandmother and aunt. Eventually, I followed suit, then my husband, my daughter, but most of that puzzling was for the fun of it. Only my father was ambitious enough to enter our city newspaper-sponsored contests that had a range of very appealing prizes.
Like what?
Well, he had won a lamp, a set of silverware, right, and $5 twice.
Wow.
Then came along Who's It? Who's It was a contest that the newspaper ran for 90 days, each day presenting a silhouette of a well-known person, nine names to choose from, and a hint. The silhouettes in the early days were pretty easily identified. Example, Abraham Lincoln.
Okay. All right.
But as the contest progressed, the people were less prominent, the identities more difficult to solve. And my father, in those days before the internet, visited local libraries, thumbing through books to find clues for figuring out who the people were. A contestant could enter as many times as he wanted, so my father sent in six entries. In case of a tie, a jingle had to accompany the entry, something about why the contestant liked the newspaper. Two of my father's entries were identical, so he put his name on one, my mother's name on the other, and wrote two different jingles. I still remember the day the phone rang, and my mother answered. When told she had won the contest, she was in disbelief, certain that some prankster friend of my father's was calling. But the newspaper rep assured her the whole thing was legit. The entry jingle with my mother's name had been judged the winner.
All right.
The one with my father's, second place. The prizes? A house and a car.
Get out.
Yep. Out of thousands of entries, my father's two were the only perfect ones.
Wow.
33 contestants got just one silhouette wrong. Perhaps it was because the top two prizes went to one family that the newspaper's front page had the headline, Wife, Husband, 1-2 in Post Who's It Contest. Accompanied with a picture of my parents and my brother and sister. But where was I?
Yeah, where were you?
Indeed.
The photographer had come to our house and taken many photos, some of which I was in. But I had to leave midway through the session for a Girl Scout outing. I was certain, though, that a picture with the entire family would be selected.
Naturally.
Not so. Mm. Only my name, spelled wrong, was mentioned in the article, and I was so mad.
Oh, no.
At any rate, this family history of puzzling was probably an influence on me that I hadn't realized until recently. I grew up to be not a puzzler, but a writer of poetry. Attending the University of Houston's creative writing program through two degrees, both MFA and PhD. And I now recognize that my approach to the creation of a poem is much like the solving of a puzzle. In writing one, first there are certain basic considerations. What will the poem be about? What form will it take? What kind of language will be used? During the actual writing, decisions may be modified. After a first draft, the poem might be revised slightly or considerably, set aside, or thrown out. Then, too, a particular one could be subjected to countless revisions over a long period of time, even years, and that happens with me a lot.
Yeah.
All of this activity reminds me of puzzling, but perhaps the kind of poem I have been obsessed with recently is most closely related to the solving process. I have discovered the cento.
Tell us what that
is. At this point, you might say not who's it, but what's it?
What is it?
What's it?
Since the form is not as familiar as, say, the sonnet. The cento is an historic poetic form originated by the Roman poet Ausonius, who lived from 310 to 395 A.D., so you know it's an established form.
Mm-hmm.
The ancient Greeks assembled centos in homage to Homer, the Romans in homage to Virgil, And of course, the postmodern writer can pay homage to anyone by using lines and giving credit to their originators. Though poets often mix borrowed lines with their own, the true cento, Latin word for patchwork, is composed entirely of other sources. To create a cento, you have to solve the problem of significance and sense. If you're into significance, sense making can be a challenge. You're taking all these different lines from different people.
Sure.
Though grammatical sense making is much easier. Then, in addition to the satisfaction of paying homage, the patchworker has the pleasure of creating some totally new poetic work. I have been playful with the cento form, sometimes combining it with other forms like the sonnet, the villanelle, sestina, or ode. Occasionally, my theme is about the writing itself. And I have centos of color, where every line contains red, or blue, or green, or yellow. I have written over 100 centos, some of which I have collected for one manuscript titled From an Echo Woven Basket. Oh. Echo woven, coming from the French poet-artist Jean Arp. I have sent the manuscript to several contests and so far have been a semi-finalist in one. I'll end this story now by reading a short cento of mine titled Head Without Premeditation, whose lines are translations of 28 women poets from many different countries.
Beautiful.
Nothing exists until its moment of absence. Then, from the highest tower of absence, the passion of events. The rising moon of eyelashes sparkles, and it's in words the morning comes flowing, the sun arriving on a head of steam. Everything opens up. Endless petals, the smell of wild medicine, the tissue that death was binding around you. Mollusks and verses, slugs and a curl, the plucked angel's wing, powerful soul quakes. Everything was shooting up from an undulating twining root, wriggling out of dense red darkness, struggling with its mute lament, waiting buds in suspended animation. Come, breathe close with me. Alone, you listen to the dark dissolving, heavy with the rain of all eyes. Light is close sometimes, besieged by obstacles in unorganized sentence fragments, until the wind is the only word hewn from darkness forged from light. What boils in me darkly is heard no more. Now silence. The silence is cold enough to split a rock. That singular voice has stopped. Silence is complete. I breathe happiness instead of air.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
And strange and wonderful and delightful. And it's so many things.
I like all that.
Yeah, it's a lot of things. It's a multitude.
It's a multitude, yes.
That is awesome.
Thank you.
Jackson, tell us, you know, in the story, you kind of explain it, you know, how that feeds your creative flame that you're solving and and searching. And tell me more about that.
Well, you know, I never really thought about this connection until I had to come here with a story. And the story of my father winning the contest is always uppermost in my mind because it seems so unusual to win a house and a car in the same contest.
I'll say.
And a contest that isn't a sweepstakes that you had to work for, you know. But in thinking about it, I realized that my approach to poetry is kind of like solving a puzzle or going on a quest. And I think my essence is quester. I'm always looking for something. That's why I love research.
Yeah.
So that's the connection, I think. And that's what feeds my interest in it, is looking for the next thing and creating the next thing.
Yeah. It's we have these breakfasts at my house on Friday mornings, and often, you know, Jackson will say something or someone will say something, a word that nobody knows, and and Chris will always pipe in, Jackson's going to do a poem about that word now. Because she is. She's going to go research it and find, anyway.
That's true. Or I'll say something like, there is college credit offered for this breakfast. Because sometimes it feels like there is.
It does.
And I need those credits.
So this is Harwood Taylor and Chris Gorman with Tatiano Gago, and you are enjoying stories with guest storyteller Jackson Shaw and guest hosts, me and Chris Gorman. On So What's Your Story? On Houston's KPFT 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. Tatiana, please give us a rundown of all the great storytelling activities here in H-Town.
Happy to, Harwood. Let's start with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, because it's a great place to learn about the art of telling. They meet the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emanuel, located at 1500 Sunset. The next monthly story swap will be on February 26th. The Guild sponsors all sorts of great events, so be sure to visit the Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for information about all of the great stuff that they do. And while you're checking out the Guild's page, you should listen to some of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008 listed on the menu under radio program.
It's so cool.
It really
is. That you can do that.
Mm-hmm. There are well over 400 of them, so you better get started, like how Krista said. Grab a drink.
Get a drink.
And if you don't own a radio, that's no problem, because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org and on our Facebook Live. You can visit us on our So What's Your Story Facebook page and share with all of your friends. And we'd love it if you like us when you leave. So What's Your Story is also on YouTube. And come to think of it, we're all over the place. And remember our friends at The Moth at Warehouse Live, the second Tuesday of the month, where you'll enjoy dazzling stories and get acquainted with Houston's storytelling community. The next one is Tuesday, February 12th, and the theme is Love Hurts. I guarantee if you love hearing great stories, this will become one of your favorite monthly events. And finally, a friendly reminder that Dr. Hank is teaching a class on crafting a personal narrative at the Women's Institute on February 4th, 11th, and 18th from 1 to 3 p.m. And a few spaces are still available. And as always, know that if you have a story, ideas, or comments for anyone on our team, tell us what they are at story@kpft.org. We promise to get back to you. Are we?
Thank you, Tatiana. Next week, Hank will be ushering in the Valentine's Day season with three outstanding tellers, Lola Corazon, Nadia Hakim, and Eric Heen. It's a show you won't want to miss. But why would you want to miss any So What's Your Story? Chris, I know you have a story that you're excited about, and I love this story, by the way.
Well, thank you. I want to tell you a little bit about it because I don't want anyone thinking I wrote it because I'm not that kind of person. This is a short story by a female Iranian writer. Her name is Porochista Kapoor, and she has just written a really hot novel that's out right now. It's called Sick, because she suffers from Lyme disease, and she is a young person who is often on oxygen and often in a wheelchair. And she writes this memoir of her life as a sick person. And I want to read this so bad, and I can't wait till it gets to the thrift store so that I can afford to get me a copy. But in the meantime, I found this short story that she wrote. And hang in there with me. I'm going to tell it to you now. When the tide of misfortune hits, even jelly will break your teeth, by Porochista Kapoor. Bad things were happening, he thought, much more than ever. For a while, he even thought he was cursed. In his few years on this planet, so many misfortunes had happened to him, and it just seemed to inform his every move. In his brain, it was kind of like a list. Paper cut that turned into an infection, a very long flu, death of a cat, the floods, father losing job, earthquake, broken arm, droughts, failing math class, unrequited love, allergies, mother's mental illness,
wow,
getting lost in the woods, not getting into university, parents' finances gone, grandparents dying, fight with brother, a summer spent entirely in a mysterious illness, the government collapsing, extreme weight loss, being fined for drunk driving, the worst job, a girl leaves you, heat wave,
this goes on.
Father's affair, mother's attempted suicide, mouse infestation, getting evicted, birds dying mysteriously, unemployment, the mugging, getting a disease from a girl, drug addiction, another bad job, panic disorder, hurricane, lack of drinkable water, constant anxiety, blood in urine, bankruptcy, a close friend's deceit, death of mother, record for coldest winter ever, running over that fox, wasp sting that results in hospital stay. There was probably more he even forgot about. Failure seduces those most who have known it before, he read somewhere, maybe in an advice column. That sounded true to him. And even though he wasn't the type of guy that would look to the heavens for guidance, he had heard about this spiritualist that was coming to his town, someone who specialized in getting people from bad fortune back to good fortune. He thought he probably should give that a try. So when he was looking in the newspaper, he saw a little ad for the spiritualist, just a simple graphic, a dove on a field of flowers, and a phone number, and it just said the spiritualist. He thought he should give that a call. So he dialed the number, and he said, "Hello, is this the spiritualist?" And a warm female voice answered. She said, "Yes, it is I. What can I do for you?" He said, "I don't know. Everything's going wrong. I just need to get my life back on track." She said, "I understand." He said, "You understand?" She said, "Yes, certainly. Very few people call me when everything's going well." She said, "I'll be in your area next week. Would you like to make an appointment?" And he said, "How do you know where I live?" She said, "It comes up on my caller ID. I know the area code." She could have said she was clairvoyant. He appreciated the honesty. So she gave him the address. And he went to the appointment, and he thought he'd be going to like a witch's hut or some sort of hermit's cave. But he was disappointed. It was just a basement apartment in a kind of seedy part of town. He stood outside the door, and that same voice said, "Come in." He was extra disappointed when he opened the door. It was just dirty brown carpet, a couple chairs, a small table with a pitcher of water and some plastic cups. But really what surprised him most was the spiritualist herself. That large, warm voice came from a very small 13-year-old girl. She was wearing a simple black dress and a ribbon in her hair. She said, "Did you bring the money?" He said, "I have it in my pocket." And he went to reach for the money. She goes, "You don't have to show it to me up front. I'm not a prostitute. Have a seat." So he sat down. She said, "Would you tell me a little bit about yourself?" And he ran down that list of troubles, the one that he had just been thinking about, because when he thought about himself, that's what he thought. And just to let her know that he was finished, he said, "That's all." And she said, "Have you ever heard the saying that when the tide of misfortune hits, even jelly will break your teeth?" He said, "No, I've never heard that." She goes, "Oh, they used to say it in the villages. It has a logic to it." She said, "Give me your hand." And so she took his hand, and her hand was cold and thin in his hand. She goes, "You don't seem like the kind of person who money comes to easily." He said, "Yeah, I seldom have any." She goes, "Have you ever thought about playing the lottery?" He said, "No." She goes, "Well, you are this week. Write down these numbers. After you win, come back and see me. We're going to need a lot more appointments, and I don't want to be worried about how you're going to pay me." So he did. He went home and played the numbers, and he won. He had never won anything before. At first, he didn't even know what he had won, but he had won a large sum of money that was doled out in installments every month. He knew he'd never have to have a problem paying the spiritualist again, so he went to his next appointment, and he said, "I won." And she said, "I know." He said, "That's amazing." She goes, no, don't get excited. You're not ever going to play again. Some people just want to play over and over again. And he said, do all lottery winners come to you? She said, oh, yes, they do, but you're done playing. In fact, I thought about what you need next. You need a wife. And he said, a wife? He wasn't the type of guy that spoke to women easily. And she said, well, your wife, she works in a restaurant down the street. You should go eat there, sit in the back section. She'll be your waitress. He said, a wife. So he got the address. So he went to go have dinner. He sat in the back section, and he was looking around curiously for the woman that would be his waitress. And he was happy to see that she was tall and thin, but when he got a glimpse at her face, she was nothing special. She was just plain. Mostly she just looked kind of exhausted. And when she brought the check, he said, you look so beautiful to me. She goes, oh, I'm not. I'm not. That's nice of you to say. He said, you look so beautiful to me. Why don't we get some coffee? By the end of the week, she was his girlfriend. By the end of the month, they had gotten married, and her parents were really happy because she had married a wealthy lottery winner. On the next appointment to the spiritualist, he didn't say a word. He just walked in and showed the ring on his finger. And she goes, oh, you're happy. Most people are happy at first. But it's a 50-50 chance, you know, if you'll stay together. I wish I could do better with that. But most people have kids, and I hear that they're good company anyway. He goes, do all married people come to you? She said, yeah, some at the beginning, most at the end. She goes, I know what you need next. You need a job. He's like, a job? She goes, yeah, and a son. You will have a son. You should go and write a book. By the end of the year, you'll be done with your book tour and your son will be born. And all that she said came to pass. And when he came back to the next meeting, he just came in and sat down with a big smile on his face. And he goes, you know, I just really want to thank you for my life. I love my life. I enjoy being a father. I didn't know being a writer was going to be fun. And I don't have to worry about money. And Mina, she's a great wife. I was surprised. He goes, what's next? And she goes, oh, you're asking me? And he said, I'm asking, what's next? And she said, well, no one likes this part. This is the ending part. He said, what is it? And she goes, illness. And then death. And he wasn't really worried when she said illness. He thought maybe it was just a cold or something. She said, how old are you? He said, I'm 40. She goes, okay. In 10 years, you'll get the illness. You can go to the doctor, but remember, don't take the medicine. He said, don't take the medicine? She goes, no, some people like to prolong it. I just want the suffering to be over for you soon. So he kind of forgot about it, frankly, and 10 years later he did get sick, and he did go to the doctor, and the doctor was writing out his prescription, and when it touched his hand, he remembered what the spiritualist said, and he kind of blurted out, oh, the spiritualist, and the doctor said, you know the spiritualist? And he said, you know the spiritualist? And the doctor said, I wouldn't have a family or a practice without the spiritualist. You should do what she says. And he just took the prescription from the doctor and said, oh, small world, huh? When he got home, he threw away the prescription. And soon the pain started to intensify, and he went back to see the spiritualist. And he said, I didn't take the medicine. She said, good, good. He said, what comes next? She goes, you know what comes next. He said, how long? She goes, I don't know. He said, well, that's not fair. You knew about the lottery. You knew about my wife and my job and my son. But you can't tell me this. You can't tell me the one thing I want to go. She goes, you have time. He said, how long? She goes, you have enough time. He said, please. And she started to walk him towards the door. He said, please. And she said, look, you have to go. I have so many other clients. Everybody. And on the way out, he grabbed one of the empty plastic cups as if to take a souvenir. She goes, we will not see each other again, and closed the door. Well, soon people started to say that the illness had gone to his mind. All he did all day long was rage against the spiritualist, talk about the spiritualist. And what made him most angry of all is that no one would admit that they knew her at all. And one day the pain was so intense and his anger was so large, he just sped walk back to that crappy apartment. And he stood in front of the door waiting for that voice to say, come in. But there was no voice saying, come in. He stood there for a long time until he got angry. And he was not the type of man to barge into a place where he did not belong. But then he took his foot and he kicked that door open. And as soon as he stepped across the threshold, all he saw was a wisp of black smoke, or maybe just the idea of a wisp of black smoke. And when he stepped into the room, all the lights went out for him and maybe for everyone.
Wow.
Whoa.
I just love that story.
Me too.
It's haunting and it's life. I don't know. It's encouraging to me. It just says get busy.
I don't know. I liked, because at first I thought it meant one thing, and then I thought about it some more and it meant something else. And then I thought about it some more and a third thing came to mind. So it's kind of a fairy tale or a parable in my mind, you know. In my mind, it's like a parable or a fairy tale. It really, part of it is what you bring to it, you know, what you bring to it yourself. And I think if we said that to the lady who wrote it, I think she'd be glad if we said that.
So how do you feed your creative flame? And maybe does this story, is that?
Well, that's part of it. I get overly excited about things.
Okay.
When I like something, I really, really like it. And then I want to find out everything about that. Maybe we have that in common, Jackson.
Yes, I think so.
We need to know all about it, whatever that thing is that we cannot let go of.
Right.
And this story falls into that category. Very well.
I would agree.
So I've got one more story, and I play basketball. And first of all, thanks, Chris. That was wonderful. It's literally one of my favorite stories. It's just so fun to go on that ride with you. I can imagine all those things, and it blows me away that you have such a great hard drive and you can hold all this information. Because, folks, she's not reading. That's just, she memorizes this stuff.
I would recommend that you actually read this story because the writing in it is so beautiful that I cannot convey. The way she has written it is a whole nother experience if you were to read it.
I would suggest that your inflection is equally beautiful.
And I would thank you for such a statement,
okay.
But I would differ in that I have read the actual piece.
All right, well, I'll read it too.
All right, now I want to hear your other story because this is also a story that I really like, and this is a very current story because you told this recently at the Moth, so I would like you to tell it.
I did.
Here
you
now.
Know, one of the great things about the Moth is that, you know, you live a life you don't, or certainly I didn't really journal much, and the Moth asks you to take a word or a theme and then come up with something, and you start scanning your life, and then you have a thing. And I love basketball, so I wanted to do a story about it for a long time, so this is about that. So, I love basketball. And I've loved it since I was 13 years old and I was a St. Anne's Fighting Shamrock. We were the fiercest greenery in all of Houston. I loved basketball and I played in my teens and into my 20s and into my 30s. Around my mid-30s, I was playing in city parks and outdoor parks. And I started to play with these guys and gals that were just stronger and quicker than me, and I started to get hurt. And I thought, it's time to put the basketball down. So I did. So now, 5 years ago, I was 50, and I'm standing in a popcorn line at the movie theater. I'm at this Miles Davis preview party. And strike up a conversation with this guy. What do you do for fun? I said. He says, I play basketball. Well, I immediately size this guy up. I'm like, he's 10 years older than me. I said, you know, 10 years older than me. I said, with who do you play basketball? He says, a bunch of guys my age. All of our kids went to the same school and we play in their gym. Well, in my head, I'm already playing with them. I mean, it's full court. It's air conditioned. It's hardwoods. I mean, I hadn't played in that kind of situation in a long time. I said, you know, that's the kind of group I feel like I could be really competitive with. And he said, you're welcome to come anytime. Well, I have been going every week twice a week for the last 5 years, and I've been having a ball. Communication is critical in basketball. When you're young, it's the difference between having a good team and winning and losing. When you're 50 or 55, which is what I'm about to be on March 17th, I play carefully. I play in such a way that I can play again. And part of that also involves communication. One such thing, without going into a lot of description of it, is called a pick. And calling out a pick is as simple as, Harwood, pick left or pick right. But I didn't hear that on this one day, just to give you an example. And so I'm going full speed, and what it means is I'm about to run into somebody, and I don't know. And so when this guy hit me, he caught me right under my rib cage, and it just pushed all the air out of my lungs. And I, you know, if I'd have been in my 20s, I would have coughed a little bit, shook it off. I probably would have played for 2 more hours. They said, are you okay? And I said, nope, not okay. I'm done. I'm done for the night. I was done for that night. I was done for the next night. I was done till after seeing a chiropractor 5 weeks later. Now I'm back on the court again. And so I'm walking into the basketball court, which, by the way, is everything I imagined in that popcorn line. I mean, it is a full court. They refinish it every year. It's heaven. And I see this guy sitting there, and he's somebody I don't recognize. So I'm going to walk up and say hi, because somebody said hi to me when I was new. But I also noticed that this guy's got the weight of the world on him. I know depression, and he just doesn't look okay. And as I'm getting closer, I just think, wow, he looks like the kind of guy that no one would approach. And for those reasons, I said, hi, I'm Harwood. I hadn't seen you here before, and I just wanted to introduce myself. He says, actually, I'm Steve, and he said, my kids went here, so I used to play with these guys 10 years ago. I just hadn't played in a long time, so I'm not new. And I said, oh. I said, so what do you do outside of basketball? And he said, well, I used to have a company, but I sold it. Well, everything that he's saying is really slow and heavy, and it just, again, feels like the weight of the world's on this guy. And I'm trying to lift him up. I said, you sold your company, right? I mean, that's a good thing, isn't it? And he said, yeah, it was a good thing. I said, so what are you going to do now? And he goes, well, that's part of the problem. I don't know. And I don't remember anything else about that. I said, well, I said, you're going to play basketball. And he said, well, yeah. He smiled and he said, tonight, you're right, I'm going to play basketball. I don't remember anything else about that night. 2 weeks later, we get the normal email. And the email is just to tell us that there's not a PTA meeting or a school play or something. There's no chairs and tables on the basketball court. He says, basketball's on tonight. If you're coming, come a little early. I want to make an announcement. I went. He gathered everybody at half court. And he said, I didn't want to send this out in an email. He said, Steve committed suicide. And I know we're just playing basketball here, but I want you to know that if you've got something going on, you can talk to me. And he said, from now on, when I send these emails out, I'm going to send them so you can see everybody's email address. We need to be able to reach each other. And that changed me. I'm busy like everybody, you know, and we finish late on Monday nights. It's a work night. People would ask me to go have a drink or a bite after. I always said no. I always say yes now. So I was playing with these guys, and one of the things, this was the other night, and one of the things that would make me angry is that these guys never warm up. These old guys. This guy's 65. I mean, I'm thinking, you're twice as old as me. I'm not doing the math right, but you know, you should be warming up. And they would just be shooting the stuff I can't say on the radio. They're shooting the stuff. They're shooting their mouths. They're just talking. And then I thought, maybe that's why they come. And maybe that's the most important part. That's it.
Good story.
Yeah. Thanks.
That's an amazing story. And I think it does. I'll answer the question I was going to ask you. What feeds our creativity in this room is being around creative people.
Absolutely.
And especially creative people that understand that we love what we do and that love our stuff too.
Yes.
So you need someone who's supportive to say, you know what, that weird story that you're going to tell for like 90 minutes, you need to tell that. That's awesome.
That's right.
Right?
Absolutely. You know, I was going to say, you know, one of the things that feeds my creative flame is, I mean, these are such basic things, but it's really taking real good care of myself.
Mm,
and
yes.
I'm talking about eating right. And I mean, I love sweets and I'm never going to give them up. I mean, in some alternate universe, I don't eat sweets and I have stomach muscles and all that stuff. I'm not that guy ever. But I do watch what I eat now, and I exercise every single day because I did fight depression for a long time. And one day I'll tell a story about this Jack Russell Terrier who was my soulmate, and then I watched him get hit by a car right in front of me, and it was the worst loss ever. Anyway, after that I realized, because I had to, I started skating and exercising every day, and I realized it changed my chemistry, and I read about it. I mean, we've all read about this. Everybody knows exercise is good for you. I'm telling you folks, if you're creative, you have to do it. This is what I believe. I have to do it.
What's your requirement, Jackson? What do you require as a creative soul on this planet?
Just time and space and all of my books around me.
Mm. The right environment.
Yes, the right environment. Either the tea house where I go or my own room with all my books around me. One of those two places are the best locales.
Those are both
creating.
Amazing places,
yes.
I will say.
You got to have time to daydream. I mean, it doesn't seem like an important thing, but daydreaming or just sitting and not having a thought, or, you know, driving somewhere. To me, I love driving, and I'd have to do it for business sometimes. I love that time.
There is a person in the control booth who I would like to ask what feeds their creative flame. Can I get Dr. Hank to answer this question, please?
I'm sorry. I was taking a nap because people my age have a very hard time staying up, you know. When you're twice the age of someone who's 55, you have to understand that. Herbert, I don't know if you know that I'm 66. Did you know that?
Whoa,
that's my
math. Did you know that? I know.
That's
I just
fuzzy
want you
math.
To know. Yeah, I know. Some of you are thinking, "My God, when he was in school, there wasn't any history." I'm not really not that old. In any event, I loved you guys until you talk age. But thank you, Chris. I appreciate the question. You know, I got to tell you, and I've been making notes and sharing it with you guys for the last hour, but this is such a great show. And you know, what feeds my creative soul, honestly, is being fueled by people like you. That's it's an honest statement. You know, if you don't mind, I wanted a segue into our fun drive actually in a couple of weeks, because it actually has a great deal to do with my creative soul. You know, when I started the show in 2008, it was an open journal. We did it once a month, the fourth Friday of the month. And I was told by lots of people, powerful people, "Hank, you know, we like you. You're a smart guy. You're talented and you can do this, but no one's going to listen to your show. No one really cares about storytelling, really." And that's what I was told. And this is before The Moth or anything else. And I had a lot of faith that people could connect without plugging anything in. I thought that this would be a way of doing that.
Indeed.
And, you know, and when I say that it's being around people like you, I mean that literally, because I had to find tellers just like you and Chris and Jackson and people who would be willing to come on the air and take us on journeys and then return us safely to the present, as I would say. Mm-hmm. And when I hear that, when I hear your stories, it does something to my experience base. It just juggles a whole lot of things. I remember things. I remember about my dog, since you just talked about your Jack Russell. You know, when Chris told that magnificent story about the spiritualist, and Chris, you tell folk tales, and I think I mentioned this to you earlier, so much better than you ever imagined, because, you know, you're always you're all stellar at telling personal stories, but you tell these kind of stories pretty magnificently. And when I listen I listen to these stories, this is what fuels my creative energy. You know, I use them in the books that I write. I use them in the stories that I tell. I use them in the stories that we produce and host. I share them with my students. I do everything that I can to take this great stimuli and to share it with people that really matter. And you know, on a practical level, our listeners have to know this because people love this show. They do. And we're here on Thursday prime time in the middle of every other program because we rock, because we're the anchor. And we do that, well, we do that because we're the epitome of community radio. We've got things going on that's live. Everything is live. It's as real and it's raw as it comes, and we're listener-sponsored. And people have to pay for this, and they're willing to do so. So when we do our fun drives, and I always talk about, give us a call at 716-526-5738 during the show, it really demonstrates how people are listening to us. And that's what we need people to do, to really make sure that they are fueled by the kind of creative spirit that we're listening to in the studio tonight. That is what ignites creative stuff, by listening to each other and realize that we need more of it, and we're going to get more of it. I just love you guys, and you know that. And this was just a magnificent show, and that is not a word that I use often. I use words like great, really good, nice job, but magnificent isn't one that comes at freely. This was just a great, great, magnificent show. Thank you.
Well, I'm so grateful for this show, and it does feed my creativity to have this as a place to be able to tell a story and have it beautifully recorded on the Storytellers Guild. It's an amazing deal.
Plus, it's great to be in this building at KPFT because everybody cares about their show, and there's so many diverse shows, and somebody cares about each one of them. They put their heart into it because they are here, and they do it every single week.
Yep.
So don't listen to this show only. Go listen to another one that you're not even familiar with. You might really like it.
It's true. It's true. So, Jackson, you have any last thoughts on feeding your creativity?
Well, you know, obviously, as you all are kind of saying, too, just being on a program like this and getting to tell a story and talk about creativity feeds my creativity.
That's
I want to go home and do more.
Right.
I want to make
Me
another
too.
Story. I want to make too. Another poem.
I liked that story about your family. Now I feel like I got an edge on you because I know more things about you. That's awesome.
Yeah, I just love that story anyway. It makes me remember my father in all the good ways.
Good. Yeah. Well, don't you dare move, because Lars is up next with a sweet mix of singer-songwriters on the Tennyson tapes. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Harwood Taylor.
And Chris Gorman. And
Jackson Shaw.
Along with the rest of So What's Your Story team, Dr. Hank and Tatiana Gago, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
If you decided to donate your birthday to KPFT this year, thank you. If your special day hasn't yet arrived, consider donating your birthday to KPFT. Here's how it works. Facebook sends you a prompt before your birthday asking if you'd like to donate your birthday to a nonprofit. Select KPFT as your organization of choice. Then add a personalized message so that your friends know how much KPFT means to you. On your birthday, they'll receive a Facebook notification asking them to make a donation in your honor to KPFT. Thanks again for supporting 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, Pacifica Radio for Peace.
You are listening to KPFT 90.1 FM Houston and online at kpft.org. Your local station board election is happening. Visit elections.pacifica.org to find out about the candidates, members like you who want to help keep KPFT alive. Look for your ballot starting January 18th via email or postal mail. Vote as soon as you